background of this call really has to do with my reading an article in Network Marketing Times. I think it was about 4 months. I had three or four Network Marketing Times that I hadn't totally finished, so I kind of pulled them out in my briefcase on an airplane a couple weeks ago just to go through them to make sure I went through and read every article, because I tend to pick them up and read a couple articles, and then I set it down instead of reading the whole thing front to back. So I went to do that on the airplane, and I came across an article by a woman back, I think it was in April or May edition of Network Marketing Times, and she outlined, she said, the four most important elements of network marketing are sharing, recruiting, training, and leadership development. And that was what she outlined in her article. And I looked at that, and I stared at it for a while. I know some of you kind of go, well, so Mary Jo, I would have read that and just pass it by, you know. But not me. I'm looking at it going, sharing, recruiting. And I started saying to myself, wow, I kind of put those two as if they're two in one. I've never distinguished the two of them, sharing and recruiting. And really, it just opened my eyes to something that I wanted to share with all of you. I've shared it on another training call I do, and I thought this is great for Monday call, too. That are we really recruiting? Are we really recruiting? Or are most of us in the share mode? Because when we start getting caught up in this is health, and we want to share the health, and most of you on this call and most of the people I work with in my organization, because I'm so heavily involved in the health mission, we tend to be very health oriented. We tend to emphasize health. We tend to be on that mission of educating people about health and getting. Could I get people to mute so I can go on with the call? Because the interruptions disturb me.
Well, it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I got it. But I need *6. Please hit *6 on your phone so that we can cut the background noise out. Thank you. So anyway, so I started looking at these four things. I said sharing and recruiting to me kind of blended, because I'm going to start five people. We have a lot of disruption. Okay, that should cut off the background noise. All right, so sharing and recruiting to me kind of blended. They blended into each other. And I started looking at what I do, and a lot of times when I'm working with people, I tend to be all health-oriented, and I get people signed up to get well. And I think we're leaving out that recruiting element. At least I felt a real heaviness on my heart around why are we not recruiting and we're just focusing on sharing instead of focusing on recruiting. We all get the training and leadership development areas. So, you know, I want to kick off this call with each of you. I'm just going to give you a suggestion to really, when you get off the call or even on this call, start looking at evaluating your business as you run it today and break it down into those four quadrants and see, what are you doing? Just, you know, make a list of the four quadrants and say, what am I doing in each one of these areas? Sharing, of course, is our prospects and going out and, you know, how are we finding new people? What are we, you know, what are we sharing? What kind of materials are we using? So that's a big one. We can all understand that. Recruiting comes from the perspective of who am I really trying to convince or get involved in the business, in the concept of, you know, getting involved with, you know, building residual income for themselves. What materials, what am I doing to drive this part of my business? Not just for prospects, because some of you say, well, Mary Jo, I don't like to present the business side of it. And I said, well, that's fine. It doesn't have to be done up front, but are we really looking at the people we sign up once they're on the products? What are we doing to recruit them to come on board with us? What are you doing as a follow-up? You know, are you dripping on them about the critical importance of residual income and creating residual? What are we using as tools to make that happen? And then training, what are you doing in the training realm? And the fourth one is leadership development. What are you doing to really help your people grow in leadership? Are you sending them to Power of Purpose? Are you using Clemmer? Are you giving leadership development seminars? Are you doing coaching calls to help people learn how to be coaches and mentors? How are you helping people develop themselves as leaders? And all four of them have to be aspects you work on in your organization and in your business, or you're not going to grow. You may grow in spurts. You may get some giant activity levels because some major prospector comes on board with you. But if you're not working on all four levels, I'm going to suggest to you you're not going to be building a balanced organization that's going to last forever. And that's our goal. We don't want to hit and miss. We want to grow something, and we want to not have it just be stable. We want it to continue on a growth pattern. But recruiting was the big one that really stuck out for me, which is why I wanted to share with you what that's all about, why it's so important, why we need to put some emphasis on it. And it's not just about pulling out the MAP program by any means. So that's why I wanted to spend some time today on the call to just talk about recruiting. There's a dramatic difference between sharing and recruiting. Don't look at recruiting as signing somebody up. Look at recruiting as getting people to really see the vision and see the mission and join the mission and work on a mission. In other words, dedicate time and energy around supporting people to get started on products. So that is what is retail. The first section is, why is recruiting different from prospecting? It's hugely different. Number two, what is recruiting? You're emphasizing the importance of creating a residual income. How are, you know, in people's lives, how are you doing that? Start evaluating that. How are you changing people's paradigms? Because people really are out there with different, everybody has different belief systems, different experiences, different programs running their life based on things that have happened in their life. We're all structured and we all function differently because of how our experience has been. So we're very unique and very different in our own ways. And so what your challenge is how do I open up people's eyes to what's really happening in this world and let them shift in their paradigm? And the reason we need to help people shift is why? Why do we need so desperately to do it? Because statistically, we have a lot of people having severe financial problems in this country. We have a lot of people retiring with zero net worth and their negative net worth because of the excessive debt that we've accumulated in our lifetime. We have a lot of issues going on, people, with the health, the underlying health. Somebody gave a statistic the other day that the average, I think it was in a Rick Moffitt's business presentation I saw last Thursday night, the average savings rate in this country is now zero to negative. The average savings rate. You know what that says? It says that the average American is spending more money than they're making today. So we're deficit spending. Of course, we're just taking after our fearless leaders in Washington, right? I mean, we've been on a trek of deficit spending nationally for, you know, years, and that doesn't justify it, but, you know, I always believe in setting examples, and if we're setting negative examples, people are going to follow the negativity in those examples. So we have this negative savings rate. So that if that's the average in America, which saddens my heart, breaks my heart, do you not see that we are desperate to help people restore themselves financially as well and get back on a track, on a mechanism, put in place mechanisms in their life so they can get out of the hole they're in? There is always a way. There's always a way. But there has to be a willingness and there has to be somebody committed. And we, as a group of Manitechers, not only are in a conceptual setting to help people with their health in a huge way, but what a beautiful thing that we can combine health and wealth at the same time. We can help people climb out of the rut that they're in and use this as a mechanism to do that. In order to be able to do that, though, all of us need to start looking at where our belief systems are and the programs that we have running us that are holding us back from sharing at that level. Because some of us don't share it at all. Some of us don't know what to share. So we're going to talk about that today because that's a big piece of the puzzle. It doesn't have to come from, you know, having extensive financial background. It doesn't have to come from college careers. It doesn't have to come from business experience. All it has to do is you have to get a few bits of information that you can share with other people. So, but what's going on in your life? What's in your belief system? What's in your programs that are holding you back from doing that? And I made a list. I just put down five issues in the outline today. There are plenty more. I mean, there are literally hundreds of programs and belief systems. In fact, the reality of it is money is an issue in and of itself. We have more programs and belief systems around money than anything else in our lives. Positive, negative, whatever it's doing, it's unbelievable how many programs that we run around money in our lives. Whether it's about saving, whether it's about spending, whether it's about what we're doing in our lives, whether it's about cash flow, whether it's about, you know, doing things to make money, doing things not to make money, whether it's about programs around rich people, you know, what are our beliefs and judgments around rich people versus poor people. We have so much stuff going on in our bodies, it's not even funny. And all of that, those judgments and all those beliefs and all those programs really just frees us from moving, you become frozen or stuck based on those programs that are running our lives. So you have to first evaluate where you are. Look at you and look at what's going on in your life. And I wrote five of them down. You can just evaluate yourself and look at that. Number one is money is bad. There are a lot of people that think money is bad in this world. You might be one of them. I mean, and that might, you know, you could look at it and say, well, Mary Jo, I don't believe money is bad. I really wouldn't wish I could make more money. And then I say, okay, so why do you have an attitude about people who have a lot of money? Oh, well, that's different. people who have a lot of money are, you know, they spend it like crazy. They waste it. They're wasteful. They have no value systems. You know, then I get this whole, like, vomiting that comes out of people's mouths about who people who have money. So then when they go through all that, I go, so that's what you, that's how you, what you believe about Sam Castor. And they look at me like, well, no. I go, well, you know, Sam's almost a billionaire. I mean, the guy owns like a huge percentage of the Manitech stock, and he's worth multi-millions. You know, do you call him rich? Do you think Sam Castor is wealthy? Do you think Linda Castor's wealthy? I mean, these people are exceedingly wealthy. And, you know, some people might look at Mary Jo and say, Mary Jo, you're wealthy. You wrote a $1 million check to your foundation, so wow, that means you're really wealthy. And I go, well, so you don't like Mary Jo because she happens to be blessed, the Lord's blessed her, and she's a good steward of what he's given. I mean, what's going on with you around money? What is happening in your life around money? And what are the belief systems you have around that to make somehow make it look bad? And that's what you got to start retracting from. You have to go back and quash those issues, because those are going to be holding you back, and they're going to be holding you back from ever sharing or recruiting people, because you got this whole blanket thing around money. The second thing people say, pursuit of making money is bad. And that's not, you know, some people say, well, Mary Jo, that comes from the Scripture. And I said, no, that's not what Scripture says. It says the love of money is what's bad. Pursuing being financially stable and financially capable and being in a position where you can make a difference in your life, you know, for whatever purpose you have, whether it's kingdom work or whatever it might be for you, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In fact, I'm going to suggest to you that's what you should be doing. You should be pursuing financial stability in your life. You shouldn't be out there. In fact, you know, if you want to go into Scripture about it, you can look at all the issues around debt in Scripture, how evil debt is, and to be indebted to people, and, you know, money lenders and all that stuff. That's the language we have. Plenty of Scripture around those issues. So pursuing making money and pursuing being wealthy or healthy in terms of your financial status, there's nothing wrong with that. What's wrong with it is perhaps for some of you might be looking at what you're going to do with the money once you get the money. How are you being a good steward with the funds you get? But pursuit of making money is not that. But you've got to look at that and say, is that part of the issues that are controlling your life? Some people tell me God is in control, so who cares? Well, so all of a sudden, like, I can get 22 credit cards and borrow money all the time because God's in control and he's going to help me work out of this. I think you ought to start taking a look in a mirror and saying, hey, I got to start taking some action. You know, coming from my Christian background, I don't disagree with God's in control. But when he's in control doesn't mean I lay on my couch and eat bonbons all day long. It means I do work for the kingdom. It means I'm directed and I'm focused and I try to live a most effective life that I can. That while I'm here, and that's what I try to do, and that's what we need to do, is to lead the most effective life we can and have that as a set goal. And that effectiveness applies to your Manitech business, applies to whatever your endeavors are, that your choices are, that you're working on, to be the best you can be. So you got to get outside of that program running your life. And number four is, if I cannot make a lot of money, they won't either. So you start looking at your own Manitech business, you go, Mary Jo, I can't present the business because I'm not making a lot of money. Well, how false is that program? That's a belief system you need to pour a whole ton of water on, because it makes no sense. What anyone else does in this business is no correlation to what you're doing in this business. And if I asked you a simple question, I said, could you have done the business differently to have made more money in it? I don't think anyone would answer that question. No, I could have done the business differently to have made more money in it. But we all do the business differently. We dedicate time and energy around different things. I travel all over the country doing trainings and support people not in my organization. In fact, I had a great weekend this past weekend in Cleveland, the Akron area. Flew into Cleveland, went to Akron, and did op meeting and training there, and it was a blessing. But there wasn't anyone in my downline there. If my whole thing was pursuit of money, I wouldn't have done that. But, you know, it's about dedicating your time and energy of impacting lives and helping support people, too. So a lot of us do the business a little differently than others, but everybody chooses differently what this business looks like for them. But we make commitments around what that looks like to fulfill our value system and to support our value system that each of us have. But the concept of saying that somebody can't make more money than you are, that's ludicrous. That's so wrong. And it's just stopping you dead in your tracks. You're never going to make any money at it unless you attract people who are anxious to get out there and make more money than you do. I want to find people that say to me, just like my new, I have a couple of youngsters, Gen Xers, now involved in my business that are really starting to take off like crazy. And it's just fun to be a part of their lives because, you know, I truly believe they're going to make more money than I do because they're very committed to it. They have big goals. They have big directions. They've set their goals and their vision of what they want it to look like, and now it's a matter of supporting them and making it happen. But if I believe whatever I'm doing today is a limitation on other people, how can I ever attract people? I'll never attract people because I'm putting a limitation on it out of my own stuff, my own programs, my own beliefs. So we got to quash that and look at this vision as much bigger than we are, than any one of us, much, much bigger and much more potential than any one of us can have. Even Jet can look at this world and say, people are going to be better than I am, going to make more money, going to be more effective. Doesn't matter what level you are, you can always look at it that way, that they're going to be people that do it better or differently and affect different results. So don't let that block you. And then a fifth program or belief system that a lot of us have is that this is only a health mission, and we put it only in front of it. Well, Mary Jo, I'm only doing this as a health mission. I go, I get that that's what's leading and directing you. I get that that's why I'm in it. I get that that's why God put me, you know, shifted my life. But I knew he had something more. And if you ever want to measure how effective you are on your health mission, look at what you're doing in your business. How many people did you sign up last week? That'll tell you how effective you are in your health mission. So even if it's just a health mission, what are you doing with that health mission? Are you playing, you know, chance and circumstance? Are you really running that mission? Are you treating it as a business? Are you treating it in a realm of trying to be as effective as you possibly can be with it? And that means that you're bringing more and more wealth and financial security to yourself, and you're going to be able to help other people do the same thing. So it's more than just health. It really has to do about allowing people to get their products for free. That's gigantic. I have a person in my downline, that's all she cares about. She just runs her entire downline based on how many team bonuses she gets. Every month she judges how well she's doing in her business by looking at number of team bonuses that are in her organization. And when that number drops, it's not even about GPV for it. It's about number of team bonuses. How many people am I helping to touch? Get the products for free. Some of you would be, you know, well-suited to do that for yourself. Start looking at that factor. How am I impacting or how am I supporting other people? How many team bonuses am I getting and helping people get? I'm going to tell you, that'll generate a lot of business. It'll also help you in where you place people. A lot of people say, well, Mary Jo, I don't know how to grow my business. I don't know where to place people. I go, go look at, just download off a success tracker people that are, you know, so close to earning team bonuses. And now you have an idea of where to place people. Wow. Help your people grow. Help your people get those team bonuses. That's the number one retention device we have is the team bonus. If you can get people getting team bonuses, you'll never lose them. So work on that level. Okay, so those are just some. Obviously, there are plenty more belief systems and programs that run everybody's lives that really step in the way of supporting us moving forward. But you need to look at those things because these are the kind of issues that stand in your way of recruiting. And that's what we're talking about today is recruiting. So you need to look at what are my issues. And you can just do that even right now, just on your outline, take it and go over here and say, what issues do I have? You might circle some of the 1 through 5 that I wrote down. You might come up with 5 other ones. But if you really dig inside of you and say, why is it that I'm not doing that? And start working on yourself and say, okay, how do I overcome that? That's the first step. First you got to get awareness, then you got to work on how do I overcome it so I don't hold myself back. Okay, and now let's talk about techniques you can use to present the crisis we are in today, because we truly have a crisis out there. We have a financial crisis. When we have negative rate of savings in this country, we are in a economic crisis, you know. And one of the things I didn't even list on the outline today was you can even put down just Social Security. If you talk about where is Social Security going to be, most of the baby boomers are looking at it like, well, I'm never going to collect on Social Security because that's going bankrupt. And that's not even as bankrupt as the Medicare system. That's $22 trillion in bankrupt. That's how negative that one is. $22 trillion short in Medicare today. So what do you think it's going to be for us when we retire? Don't count on getting any checks or medical coverage or all that kind of stuff. It's not going to be in existence because it's not possible. We can't keep that debt ratio. It's so underfunded and excess liability. So you got a lot of issues going on where this country's going with all the debt that they have accumulated in the bankruptcy of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. 3 areas that, you know, together I think the number is $37 trillion. in debt. $37 trillion in debt, those things. That's another statistic you can use. But anyway, how do you present it? You can talk about those things. You can talk about the Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, where that's going to be. Why do you think you're going to get some of that when you get retired? You better take care of yourself. That's huge. Another thing on retirement, I put that, and I attached it as part of the outline today, so you can find it in your document, is statistics on retirement. And it's on, it's like the third page of the outline, or fourth page of the outline. It says, if you take any 100 people at the start of their working careers and follow them for 40 years until they reach retirement age, here's what you'll find, according to the Social Security Administration. 54 will be dead broke. 54 will be dead broke. 36 will be dead. So 36% of us die before we reach the age of 65. 36 will be dead. So that means a total of what? 90% of us will be dead or dead broke. 90% of us will be dead or dead broke by the time we reach 65. Five will continue working, not because they choose to, but because they have to. Four will be financially secure, and only one will be wealthy. There's your statistics. That's a pretty sorry state, because what you're saying is 95% will be unsuccessful. In other words, dead broke, or have to work after the age of 65 because they do not have the finances to support themselves. So people, those statistics are from the Social Security Administration. It's a great one-page sheet. You can use that and just share it with people and say, you know, at the end of your presentation when you talk to people about health, you can say, you know what, I think you ought to also look at this. You don't have to do it today, but I think you need to look at some statistics to really open your eyes to how critical it is to build yourself residual income and show them statistics on retirement. Where do they want to be in that retirement flow? And how are they going to, you know, if they don't want to fall into the 95%, what do they want to do differently today to make that happen? Well, we can help the 36% that are dead by just getting them on healthy supplements. I mean, that's what the Manitech products do. But the rest of the group, dead broke, you got to work on that one too, because that's huge. And statistically, it's a bigger issue than being dead. I mean, you're looking at 36% are dead and 54% are dead broke. We got a lot of major issues going on financially in our country that we can help support and overcome. Okay, so that's number one. That's one way of sharing with people. Very effective, because a lot of people don't know those statistics, and those statistics aren't lie. They don't lie. It comes right from the Social Security Administration. They've got all the numbers. Number two, a second one, is what is the number one reason people do not like their jobs today? You know that over 80%, now there's tons of polls out there. Some say 95%, some say 80%. So they're all over the place. So I use the 80% because that seems to be the lowest one, 80% plus. So statistically, say 80% plus of all people in America today do not enjoy their jobs. In other words, most of them have great disdain for their jobs. It's not even not enjoyment. It's almost like the word hate their jobs. You know, they despise their jobs. They have disdain for their jobs. Now, that's over 80%. And the number one reason why people don't like their jobs is because, you know, some people say, well, it's because they don't feel like they're making enough money. No, it really has to do with one thing only, and it's lack of purpose. They feel like they live a purposeless existence. And some of you can feel that way by just looking at the jobs you're in today. I know there are people on this call that I'm probably hitting a magic button for you going, yeah, you're right, Mary Jo. I had one of my people 2 weeks ago. Not this past week, but the week before. He finally said to me, he goes, Mary Jo, that's it, I'm quitting my job. He quit. Just quit. He just had it. He says it's purposeless. I mean, it just frustrated him to all get out. And I'm like, well, you better figure out a way you're going to financially, you know, support yourself, because Manitech's not going to make it overnight for you. It doesn't, you know, you're not going to make a lot of money right first week you're in Manitech. And he came up with a mechanism to do that. And that's what he's done. And he just quit his job. And the reason is it drove him crazy. It diverted his attention. It took his mind off of things in a different direction. And it was going nowhere. It was going nowhere for him. And, you know, it was a lesson for me, because a lot of times I dissuade people from quitting their jobs. But on the other hand, I say to myself, you know what? They have so little purpose in what they're doing, and they feel so unfulfilled by what they're doing, that, you know, maybe by quitting a job, somebody's going to really put their nose to the grind and make this business work, too. Because a lot of us hang on to the job because for financial security, and we say, well, Mary Jo, as soon as I make enough money in Manitech, then I'll quit my job. Oh, man, I've heard that statement about 1,000 times over the years. and the people are still in their job. Because without the pressure of financial needs, they kind of putz. They don't really run a Manatech business. They're running a hobby on the side. Of course, it gives them some purpose. There's no problem with you keeping your job and doing Manatech on the side as long as you feel like you're part of something that really serves your purpose, that really is a mission, and that gives you at least some satisfaction that you're involved in a mission. But if you'd like to be involved in it on a bit greater level and you'd like to dedicate your life to it, maybe looking at that job and saying, time to say sayonara and push me out of the nest so that I really, you know, bust my rear end and make it. That's something you can look at doing. There's nothing that'll, you know, incite you and motivate you more than when there's no cash flow coming in. You got to make it happen. So, okay, but it's purpose is the number one reason why people don't like their job stays. And you think that we can help people see a purpose in Manatech? Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, there's another mechanism you can use to share with people and help recruit them into the mission. A third one is, what are the, we can talk about the three major things that motivate people today. There are three major things that motivate people today. What are they? If I had you on, if I took myself off mute, you could all share with me, you'd guess at them, but I'll tell you what they are. There are three things. Money, recognition, and being part of a mission. Those three things. Money, recognition, mission. Those are three things that motivate people. The top three items, this is done on a survey, done across nationwide survey, those are the top three things that motivate people today. Money, recognition, and mission. And all of you can probably say, yeah, I agree with that, Mary Jo. I can see how that's true, and you can maybe even see how it's true in your own life. But if I asked you to rank those three things, which one's number one, which one's number two, which one's number three, no one ever gets that right. So I'll help you with it. This is how it came out on the nationwide survey. The number one motivation for people was not money. The number one motivation for people was mission. And that kind of falls in alignment with what I just said on the second thing to share with people, technique for sharing, recruiting people, is talking about lack of purpose in their job, right? There it is. The number one reason people don't like their jobs is lack of purpose. Well, guess what? The number one thing that motivates people is being part of a mission. And if that job isn't part of a mission, it doesn't have a real mission work to it, that's what frustrates people. They feel like they're not contributing, and they can contribute in a bigger way. So number one is mission. Number two is recognition. That surprises people, too. They go, come on, money's got to be. No, money's only number three. Number three. So those are the way people are motivated. So using that as a statement and working with people on that, you can present that to people in terms of getting on board with Manatech. Because when you talk about mission and Manatech, that those two words fall right in, you know, they come right. They're absolutely, you know, analogous with each other. Manatech is a mission. It is about touching lives. It's about impacting lives. It's about bringing health and wealth back to this world. It's truly about bringing health to the world all over the world. I love talking about Mana Relief when I talk about mission, too. A lot of people get heavily involved in Mana Relief. They look at that as just huge. Huge part of their contribution to Manatech is being involved in Mana Relief. What an incredible benefit that was. What a beautiful insight Linda and Sam had to develop Mana Relief. And it's phenomenal what that entity is doing today all over the world. And it's just a joy to be a part of that whole process, that we can be contributors to that. And that helps people get the mission. They get to see the differences. And all you have to do, get them on one of those mission trips. Send them to Africa, Romania, on a mission trip with the Mana Relief Group. What a great experience that is, to really experience it firsthand and see the kind of poverty and war-torn areas that we work in, and these orphans that really have nothing. And, boy, I tell you, nothing greater than that than bringing people back and having them, you know, pray that prayer and thankfulness of gratitude every morning. We had a big talk on that on one of my coaching calls today. It's about just really understanding. Sometimes it takes for us to work in different arenas. I think the gal I was working with this morning was working with handicapped kids, and she said, wow, Mary Jo, I just feel so blessed. And she even put it on her homework she sent in this week in my coaching group. She said, I am so blessed to have healthy children. I mean, it just got her to come from a different perspective of gratitude and thankfulness. Not that people who have unhealthy kids or disabled children are totally blessed and feel totally blessed, too, but it's just something, sometimes we take our health and our fortitude, we take all that for granted, when in reality, you can't count on any of that. It could be here today, gone tomorrow. So it's about coming with a grateful heart, being part of that mission of, you know, supporting people and supporting people all over the world in terms of health and wealth, and that's what we have. So you have something to respond to the number one thing that motivates people today. And you can present that to people and say, that's the beauty of having Manatech as a business opportunity for people, is it really presents this mission work that we so desperately want to be a part of. Why it makes it so effective when you present it to people. Another one, fourth one, which is D in the outline under 3D, I talk about the incredible value of residual income. I've attached a sheet for you that I've used in the past. It's called The Dynamics of Legal Network Marketing, and it really gets people, wow, it really shows them some, you know, numbers on what it means to have residual income. If you look at Manatech and you're growing residual income, you can see that in order for me to support myself and develop that kind of residual income, if I needed, let's say, if I wanted to make $2,000 a month or $2,500 a month in residual income that just came to my post office box or my mailbox every month, how many dollars would I have to invest in a bank? Well, the sheet that I attached to your outline today is works on an 8%. Can you imagine? When was the last time we saw 8% interest rates? This sheet was made a long time ago, but it's been in my panoply of materials that I've had for a long time. In fact, I'll probably have Lydia retype it and put in a 3% interest rate, because that's even extensive today for what you can get at a bank. But those numbers show 8%. If you take it and you use 3%, it's even more resounding. The numbers come out even more resounding at 3%, because that's a lower rate of return that you get. But if you look at the numbers I put in the outline, you can see, if I wanted to make, some of you on this call are making $500 a month with Manatech on residual income. Well, do you realize you'd have to have $200,000 in a bank account in order to make $500 a month? You look at these numbers, people, it's pretty resounding. In order to make $1,250 a month, $1,250 a month, you'd have to have $500,000 of cash, after-tax cash, sitting in a bank account that would throw off that kind of residual income. $2,500 a month, you'd need $1,000,000, $1,000,000 in a bank account. And $10,000, you'd need $4 million. So you can create all that residual income in the left-hand column on your outline. You can create by doing Manatech. But I'd like to see you try to create the right-hand column in the job you have today. Accumulate that kind of cash after tax that you can deposit in a bank to generate that kind of residual income. And that's a huge issue, people, because a lot of people, you can say, well, Mary Jo, but I agree, but, and I'm telling you, a lot of people, in fact, there's a statistic out there that said that 90% of the bank, I think it was 2004 or 2003, they said that 90% of the bankruptcies could have been avoided that year if people would have had $400 more a month in residual income. 90% of the bankruptcies could have been avoided. Think of that statistic, people. It's huge, gigantic. So this is the number that's resounding. It is effective. I work with people, retired people all the time, and, you know, they go, well, I'm on a fixed income. And I go, well, why do you have to be on a fixed income? You're on a fixed income because you choose to be on a fixed income. If you choose to go out and share Manatech with people and you start getting involved, and we've got a lot of retired people who are doing it. In fact, we got people that, after they were 70 years old, they became presidential. So don't think you can't do that. We'll go out there and share and build a residual income so you're no longer on fixed income. You can develop another source, a resource of income for yourself. And that's the valuation that you can look at, what the difference would be whether you had money in a bank account or residual income. Huge numbers. Another one, which is number five on my list, is looking at Paul Jane Pilger's book. Here's another thing you can use. And I really wish you'd all get it and read it. I know some of you on the call have already done that. I think we still have some left, so if people want to order them from Lydia, you can do that. I don't know what the price is on them, but you can also order them from DupaPack. But it's called The Next Millionaire. It's Paul Jane Pilger's book. I love the book. I read it, I reread it, I even trained from it. I did an opportunity meeting around it because I thought it was so impactful. And he's fascinating in his book, and in fact, maybe someday I'll just do an outline of what's in his book, because some of you, you know, you can read a book, but you don't know how to take from it and share it and make it a living, breathing part of your, you know, existence. But this book is one that you want to make a living, breathing part of your existence. Paul Jane Pilger did all the economic analysis. We know he's a world-renowned economist. He's been part of two presidential administrations. The guy's brilliant. He predicted the savings and loan crisis. He predicted the Internet explosion. In the 80s, he predicted what was going to happen in the 90s. In the 70s, he predicted what was going to happen in the 80s. This guy's brilliant. You know, and he said that in the next 10 years, he came out and he did all the economic analysis. He looked at all the income flow, the cash flows, what's happening in our world, the technology changes. He says in the next 10 years, we're going to create a 10 million millionaires is his number, I think. 10 million millionaires in the next 10 years, that's what we're going to create. We're going to take create 10 million new millionaires in the next 10 years. And he says the majority of those, so he's got all the economic data to support why that's going to happen. One of the main reasons it's going to happen is you look at the shift. He looked at the shift between, you know, we went from being 100% entrepreneurs in this country. You know, in the 1600s, 1700s, all we had was entrepreneurs, mom and pop stores. Everybody was out being an entrepreneur because that's the only way of life we knew. When we started seeing the importance of specialization of labor and the efficiencies we could get in corporate world, that's when we had the Industrial Revolution. Okay, so all of a sudden everything became corporations through the late 1800s, 1900s. We saw all this huge Industrial Revolution, 1800s and 1900s, we saw that happen. And everything became corporate structure. Everybody went out and everybody started pushing a time clock because we had specialization of labor and we could maximize the income and maximize the results with that. Well, today, Paul Zane Pilser is looking at it, and he says, where does change occur most rapidly? It doesn't happen in corporate structures because there's too much red tape, there's too much administration, there's too much headache, there's too many things going on. They need 18 committee meetings before they can make a decision on something, so they don't change fast enough. And technology is running this country. I mean, technology is running a lot of corporations, they're running a lot of our lives, running a lot of what's happening in the world. You've got to be technology, you got to be on top of technology. And the most effective place for that to occur is in a home-based business. Each one of you on this call, you can change your computer system out in 1 minute. You just say something new comes out, and we see new sophistication, and boom, we go out and get it. That doesn't happen in a corporate world. They're stuck in the paradigm. They listen because it's a machine that works very slowly when it comes to change. And with technology growing as quickly as needs, we need technology that we need changes much faster, and we have to be more adept at changing quicker. And that's what's causing some of the corporations to have so many problems today. They can't change fast enough. We could look at Dell Computer, for instance. That's a tough one, going through a lot of issues because of inability to change and change fast enough to meet the market demand. But you and I, as individual entrepreneurs, we can change as quick as we can make a decision because we don't have to kowtow to board of directors or anything else. So that's why he says entrepreneurship is going to skyrocket. So he says out of these 10 million next millionaires in the next 10 years, the majority are going to come out of home-based businesses, like you and me. And then he went further to suggest that the majority of those are going to come out of the healthcare industry because healthcare is such a gigantic issue today in our society. We're watching the collapse of what we've known as healthcare. The excessive cost, the cost overruns, the phenomenal a layering and tiering of debt in our society based merely on health insurance and health problems. Socialized medicine almost going to be a must in the next 5 years, otherwise we won't have medicine. We got 40% of our population uncovered by health insurance today. That's a crisis beyond belief. So there's going to have to be some bare-bones coverage from a socialization process, otherwise we'll never solve that problem. So there's a lot of things that are looming for us out there, but we're really going to see a revamping of that, and one of the big issues is going to be around health and getting more proactive about preventive health. That's already happening. We see that predicted in the next trillion-dollar industry, which is another Pilser book about the healthcare, and health is going to be the next trillion industry. And so people, it's a beautiful thing to be able to share these kind of concepts with people to recruit them into the mission and recruit them into the massive business. So make sure you get some familiarity with that and you get that book and you're able to verbalize that in a way that you can help people understand that that's the direction we're going. The last one I put in the outline was Paul Kiyosaki talking about cash flow quadrant. Exchanging time for money. It's a dinosaur. It's an absolute dinosaur. Industrial Revolution got us caught up in exchanging time for money. It's actually the worst way in the world to choose a method of supporting yourself because the only limited asset you have is what? Time. So when you choose to go and punch a time clock and you choose to go to a job where they're paying you based on the number of hours, you are truly limiting your net worth. You're limiting your financial status. You're limiting your financial security. That's why people today have lost hope. They've lost dreams. They've quit dreaming. Because they look at their time for money and they go, I could never be a millionaire. I could never make this happen. I could never have a dream vacation. I could never contribute to this ministry. I could never help build this church in the mission field because my income is X. And it'll never be Y, it'll only be X, because I'm exchanging time for dollars. I think it's at the heart and core of why we have so much depression in this world today. I think between 80% plus of the people not liking their job because they have no purpose, and the fact that we're locked into income because of time for causing massive depression in our society. People have no hope. They can't dream anymore. They have nothing to look forward to, and they just crumble underneath the pain and agony of feeling such hopelessness. Well, people, you have the hope. It's one of the favorite words of Manitech. It's hope, bringing hope to people's lives, new hope in their lives, allowing them to open new doors, not just from a health perspective, but also from a wealth perspective. So get out of that time for money and become, using leverage. And that's what Paul Kiyosaki is all about, is using leverage to expand your horizons, leveraging off of money and leveraging off of other people. That's the world. That's where we all need to be, and there's no reason we all can't be there. It's not about survival of the fittest. It's about everybody can leverage. Anyone can choose it, but you got to break out of your bad behavior and your old habits and break into the new ones. So show the chart of the quadrants, review that with people, and see what happens. I just gave you six. Those are just six incredible mechanisms that you can use. You can do and share with people. That's all I've given you. But how many more of these mechanisms are there to share the recruiting aspects of this business? Oh, my gosh, people, it's unlimited. All you need to do is tap into your own creative side and start to use them. And start to use them. Make them part of your program that you share with people, everyone you share with. Because these are crises. These are moments of crises. We're in a crisis state in our world when we look at negative savings reports. We're in a crisis situation when 95% of the people at the age of 65 either have the financial stability to survive or have passed away. That's a crisis. That's not longevity. People say, oh, we have greatest longevity ever. Yeah, but look at those statistics and see whether it's favorable longevity. So let's make a difference. And you not only want to choose this for presentations of prospects, but at the end of the outline, I told you to choose it for your existing associates who have never been educated on these points before. You're in a great position to be able to put newsletters together and introduce these concepts to people in your downline. Don't overwhelm them by taking and put them all on them at one time. Pick one or two and utilize them in a very efficient way. And then open your ears and listen to their responses. Let them participate in the conversation. Okay, I took myself off of mute. Is everybody still there? Hello? Do I have everybody back? There you are.
Hear you.
I can tell because I'm getting it. Okay. Any comments, questions before we get cut off, people? Did you learn something today? Was this good information for you?
Yeah. Great. Absolutely. Very good. Very good.
Great.
Good?
That was good. Out of the doldrums.
It's what?
It helped getting me out of the doldrums.
There you go. Yeah, get a, what, you know, like a kick in the seat of the pants? Is that what you're calling it?
That's it.
You bet, people. We want to do that. Yeah. And these all apply to you, too. But, I mean, this, can you see how you can use this in your business when you're sharing?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Sure can.
Yeah.
And am I right that this was maybe missing in your life? Did you people react the way I did when I started looking at the word recruiting? Do you see how we're not doing that? Does everybody agree, or am I not hitting points at work?
Absolutely.
There you go.
Very good.
New view. A new view.
And have purpose.
On purpose. Having purpose, yeah. Developing, helping people get purpose in their life. Oh, that's a biggie. You didn't take that from today's call. You didn't listen. Yeah. You bet. What else? Any other shares?
Well, your question is, so how effective are you impacting or supporting others?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, are you out there doing the job?
Right.
And that really touched me.
Great.
That's going to be a change in my life.
There you go. Praise God for that. That's a blessing. Great. Yeah. Because you saw that program. You said, number five, that's me. I've been looking at it only.